Sunday, which is Grad Sunday. We are watching these young people pass significant milestones, many of whom we have known and still observed from birth. We are proud of them, maybe even a little surprised. We watch and pray for them with affection and concern. We have this expression that we use in culture that we want them to go and spread their wings. And the image that we have here is of a little bird that is finally leaving its nest. It's taking flight for the first time, and now it's going to go off and find its own food and its own nest. And inasmuch as this applies to what we are doing today with these young people, we mean that we hope that everything that we have done as a church, as a community, and as adults in their lives has equipped them to make their own choices, and good ones at that, to take their own risks, to be ready to recover from mistakes, to enjoy their ongoing growth, to deal with surprises, to show their character through the ups and downs of life. But there's also some wrong ideas, I think, captured in this phrase, it's time for them to spread their wings. There's this sense that we've done all we can, and now, you know, you're on your own. Good luck. You know, the sort of the sense that they're set. There's nothing more they can do, nothing more we can do. Hope it goes well. We do, as adults, have very much a feeling of how vulnerable they are as they head out. And we know just in how the next decades are full of so many important decisions and so many ups and downs. So we feel vulnerable as we let them go. But it is not a Christian idea that any of us are ever set, or that all the decisions have been made that need to be made. Nor do we. Is it a Christian idea that when we set out, that we are ever on our own? We never finish developing, and we are never to be on our own. What are we trying to do as a church for our young people? Inspire. Okay. Thank you, Troy. What do we want to see in them? What are we trying to bring about? What do we want them to have? Godly character. Faith.
Security.
A relationship with God. And feel good. Fear of God. Thank you. Goodness in their hearts, okay, from within.
Confidence,
yeah.
Wisdom.
Be a helper. These are incredible. I was wondering what would come up. I wondered if anyone would say they've made a decision for Christ. That they prayed to welcome Jesus into their hearts and acknowledge Him as their Lord. And interesting that, boy, times have changed, hey? I thought that might be first. Baptized. How about baptized, folks? Come on!
They already are, Joel.
Oh, sorry?
They already are.
Some of them. Yeah. Knowing their faith, I thought that might be another one that we would say. That they would be able to put into words what exactly it was that they believed. If, Reed has been a friend of mine for 30 years, and I'll read maybe has an essence. But if I can't really begin to say his name or some concrete things about him, have I paid any attention to him at all? But knowing Reed means knowing some things about him and being able to put that into words. Presumably we want our young people to know God. Some of you were mentioning things along those lines. But a lot of stuff about character and development. How do we pass all of this on?
Relationship and conversation.
Okay. Relationship, conversation.
Leading by example.
Leading by example. Oh, that's, yeah, I gave it away kind of in the title, didn't I? Yeah, yeah. I should have changed it.
Praying for them.
Thank you, Derek. Yes. Bringing them to church. Yeah. Yeah. Preaching, teaching. We hope preaching at any rate. I mean, that's teaching, studies. Mm-hmm. I want to note three things from the passages we read this morning that I think address all of this. What it is we're trying to instill in young people, how it is we want to prepare them, and how we go about that. These passages come to mind. This is two key moments in these people's lives, in the ones who are speaking. Paul writes, you heard him say, and you guys are all very still. I don't know if you heard, everyone just got quieter when Paul said, I'm coming to the end of my life. I know this is it. And now we have this sense that he is writing this letter to Timothy, who he's known for how many years, and has trained him and apprenticed him, and he has this sense, I have to let you go, I'm not going to be here. And Jesus is saying the words that we heard this morning at the end of his life. He knows that shortly he will be betrayed, and these are his final words to these people that he has called friends. So there are three things that I wanted to note from these two passages that we read. The first is that our lives have a trajectory. Now, those of you throw your mind back into grade 7 or maybe 8 or maybe it's early high school on arcs and calculating the angle of an arc. And in school, you're given sort of the beginning and you're told to figure out what's the math, and then project the rest of it based on what you discover. A Christian is on a trajectory to know God and to love God. Paul said to Timothy, remember all my accomplishments, remember everything that I've done, but he said, remember my way of life. Remember my conduct. Remember my aim. This is to say that we have a trajectory in life, and that the ways that we carry out our daily activities direct the overall trajectory, the way we are going. Paul referred again to the trajectory in life in verse 13 and 14. He said, wicked people and impostors will go from bad to worse. But you, Timothy, carry on. Paul doesn't treat Timothy or anyone as a finished product. What is telling for Paul is not one decision or one event that Timothy has made or one event in Timothy's life, but what continues to happen in Timothy's life. Wickedness, Paul says, isn't just doing one bad thing or a few bad things. Wickedness is going from bad to worse. There is a trajectory in life. And Timothy, by contrast, must continue on in what he has learned, in what he has already believed. We can also look at chapter 4, verse 7. Paul's metaphors about his own life and what they reveal. I have fought the fight. I have run the race. I have kept the faith. None of these are one-time actions. At no point does he say, I am who I am because of this one thing. But rather, my whole life has required running, keeping, fighting. These are continuous efforts right to the end. So we are never done. Whether we are young or whether we are approaching our own death, it requires running and keeping and fighting. And therefore, this is what we want our young people to know. They are never done, but rather there is a trajectory that they are caught up in, and that their choices over time is what matters. And for them to remember the goal. The goal is to know and to love God. This is a special revelation, a special insight that has been entrusted to Christians that we want to pass on. That Jesus Christ came so that we might know God, that we might know God's love. The Holy Spirit was sent into our hearts so that we might know God and know God's love. That is the trajectory of our lives. And this trajectory will help us avoid some of the dangers in life. A trajectory helps us keep perspective when things don't go well. We are very tempted as human beings to place the most importance on the thing that just happened. And so when something bad happens, or when we sin, when we do something we know we shouldn't, it can just completely undo us. Even though if someone could help us look backwards and we could see that this one thing that happened is part of this other trajectory leading us in a different direction. We don't have to let the thing that just happened matter more than decisions that have been made or decisions we will make. It can feel like there's no hope, that things will never change. But if we pay more attention to these moments, then we just go up and down in life. I am great. I am wonderful. I'm never wrong. Right, Mr. Sanger? Or, I'm always wrong. I never do anything right. Nothing works out in life. There's no hope. But if we remember that we're on a trajectory, it helps us to deal with the ups and downs of life. But it also helps us put all the other goals that are we sort of absorb in perspective. Goals like wanting to find a job that we enjoy and do well. Finding a home of our own. Having a car. Getting married, maybe. Being successful in some way. Going out and making a difference. These are all fine. Life, as we know, can be full of so many things that are out of our control. Things do not always work out. Sometimes people actively interfere and ruin these things in our lives. And there's nothing we can do about it. But that trajectory in life reminds us that we have a different goal. And maybe you have been foolish and bought a house in, like I did, in a terrible neighborhood. And it doesn't matter how much money I pour into that thing, every dollar is wasted. I will never get a return on that house. What was I thinking? Well, partly I was thinking, I have to remember. It's not about this. You know, I'm going to die, and who knows what's going to happen to that house? Who's going to know what's going to happen to all whatever money I might have invested and gained from it? In the end, I'm going to die. I can't take it with me. There's something else that I have in mind. It doesn't mean maybe I shouldn't have done things more wisely. You know, I don't want to take away from you who have done things much more prudently and with much more self-discipline. But I do remember there is another trajectory. I'm on a different trajectory. I wrote in Addie's journal the verse that has been one of the most helpful for me. Paul in Philippians writes this. This one thing I do, I forget what's behind and I strive towards what's ahead. Paul says, God took a hold of me so that I might reach out for this new trajectory. And so I'm going to keep striving for it in the midst of my own failures, in the midst of my own foolishness. I'm going to pick myself back up. Well, I'm going to let the Spirit pick me back up and I'm going to go after that trajectory again. The second thing I see in these passages is that if we are to view life as a trajectory, then what is most important, and many of you mentioned it, is character. What's going on in our hearts? The kind of people we are. What we want our young people to know is that they have to work on their character and on their daily habits because they are going to meet resistance. They are going to endure hardship. And in many places in our world, even today, they are going to meet persecution. And I don't just mean embarrassed. But when we were in Lebanon, we met people who were being persecuted. People who, for whom it meant being baptized and making and following Jesus meant that sometimes they were cut off even from their own family. They were under threat in their work, in their homes, in their churches. And this is what they asked us. Don't pray for our safety, but pray for our character, that we would have courage and steadfastness and firmness. So these passages, Paul says, I am facing death. And as far as we know, Paul was murdered by the Roman authorities. He was facing death, and he told Timothy, the character is essential. Be patient, be steadfast, be determined to have faith. And the fact is, we all die. All of us will come, like Paul and Jesus, to the moment of our own death. And so being prepared for that moment, to face that as people of faith, starts now in developing the character that will help us persevere on our trajectory towards knowing God and loving God. Jesus' words today also emphasize the importance of character. They echo Paul's words elsewhere, especially 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Jesus, especially in John's gospel, says that ethics, our Christian ethics, can be summarized by love. Love of God and love of others. And love is bound up with character and with who we are. Love cannot be substituted with a list of do's and don'ts. Love isn't a static thing that we have and we've done it, but rather love is something that has to keep being taken care of and allowed to grow. Love is bound up with who we are and who we are becoming. And so what we are trying to do with our young people and with one another is to support and encourage and nurture and teach and model character, a character of love. Life is a trajectory of becoming a person who loves God and loves others. And the third thing I see in these passages is that if we are to view life as a trajectory, then character matters. And character and is best understood, or rather discipleship is best understood then as apprenticeship. If we think about it, and all of you understood this already, so I'm sort of repeating what you've already said, but I've got these notes, so I have to keep going. Discipleship is best, or rather teaching, if we think about it, teaching, what we're trying to do is just teaching, we end up emphasizing memorizing and repetition. We think about having exams and tests. What we're measuring is knowledge. But when we talk about apprenticeship, it includes teaching. But apprenticeship is much more all-encompassing, much more engaging of all the senses. You're asking someone to walk with you, to watch how you do things, to listen how you do things, to practice doing them alongside you, to imitate you, and to expose them to this teaching in a range of circumstances. Apprenticeship is teaching lived out, not memorized, not a list of rules. And the people have a chance to see it, what it means in your life. Paul said this to Timothy in verse 10. You have observed my teaching, my conduct, my aim in life, my faith, my patience, my love, my steadfastness, my persecutions, and my suffering. Again, in chapter 3, verse 10, Paul says to Timothy, you have observed. Now, continue on, because you know the one you learned it from. Paul, Timothy, you know me. You know who I am. Now carry on. And in our gospel lesson, Jesus three times described all that he was doing as apprenticeship, as teaching by example. He said, as my Father, so have I, so should you. In chapter 15, verse 9, Jesus said, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now you carry on in my love. In verse 10, he said, keep my commandments, just as I have kept my Father's commandments. And in verse 12, Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you. As we should note here that both Jesus and Paul, when they spoke to their students, spoke to them as friends, as people who lived together, worked together, shared experiences together, and who had a deep affection for each other. These were not students or children who spent some time and then were sent off to be all alone as a finished product. Good luck. But rather, Jesus promised to be with his friends right to death. What does this mean for us? If we want our young people to grow up with confidence, with character, with love, then we have to share it with them. Then we have to model it ourselves. This has to be what they see in us as we interact with each other here. Not just that we learn something and then leave, but that we love each other through the relationship. That we model the very love that we want them to have. It means that everybody has to be involved. You have to know people. And you have to let people get to know you. Our young people need to watch you and listen to you. And to see all these things that you say matter lived out in your own life through the ups and through the downs. And whether you like it or not, they are imitating you. And it's not just our young people, but we all influence each other right to the end. However you choose to live inevitably impacts all of us. If you pray, if you love, if you serve, if you have character, if you are on a trajectory towards knowing and loving God, or if you are building up habits that lead in a different direction, all of that inevitably affects everyone around you. Stanley Hauerwas is one of the more well-known theologians of the past few decades. And he often goes back as an example of the role that apprenticeship plays in the life of a Christian. He often goes back to his own experiences as a bricklayer. He was a bricklayer because his father was a bricklayer. He writes, "My father took me out on the job when I was 7, and I had to labor until I was, I guess, 15 or 16. And at that point, 10 years later, I was allowed to start laying brick. My father was a craftsman, and when you're in the crafts, you have to learn all the smaller skills first, required in order to move up to being a bricklayer. So I labored for many years. It was hard work. Your body was filled with pain, I can assure you. But there's a joy to hard work. It finally gets to you. By the time I was in my 20s, I was still working. But my father, having laid brick all his life, his body had been destroyed. I would have to help him out to the truck every day and at the end of the day." Hauerwas was trying to show us the hard work it takes in apprenticeship before you can begin to do these things on your own. To learn all the words that matter, the right labels for things, to watch in every circumstance an expert do the task over and over again, and then finally, after watching it and seeing it, then you can go and do it. This is what we are trying to do as a church. The church is always trying to work out a way of life, what our faith means day after day after day. It is never fixed, it is never settled. There are so many changes, and so what we try and keep in mind is the trajectory that we are on. What we try and keep in mind is the character that we are developing. What we try and keep in mind is that our way of life is one that we are, whether we want to or not, sharing with everyone around us. And so as a church, we are trying to work out a way of life centered on knowing and serving Jesus, knowing and loving God. And this is a way of life that we have to work out together in prayer, in gathering, in service, so that we might model to one another a good way of life on a trajectory that leads towards knowing and loving God, a way of life that can be lived out today and passed on to the future generations. To the glory of God. Amen. Our hymn is one we don't sing very often. The words are in our service bulletin. The tune is in our hymnal, hymn number 262, Faith of Our Fathers. It's actually 279. 262 is...